Well, it's the middle of October, and so an October surprise is imminent, but it may pop on somebody who doesn't expect it. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Barry, it's very good to be with you. We are recording this program for Saturday. That would be October 20th. I'm jumping ahead a week. So that's our timestamp for this show. It's very good to be with you. It's been an interesting week. We have to apologize for you got a show last week that was a week old. So if you heard references to Kavanaugh not yet being voted on, it's because we had a technical glitch with our program for October the 6th. And that program didn't get run till the 13th. It's a dumb thing, and it's nobody's fault except the company that we use to transfer files, who we put the file up to transfer, and nobody got notified that it was up there, so they couldn't load up our show. So we're taking extra steps this week to make sure that you hear the proper show on the proper day. And if you're hearing it in a rerun, all that doesn't matter anyway.
That's all right. But the one thing, since they did hear the program we did on issue one last week,
that's right.
It's a good thing because something new just broke. And Chuck, again, the theme that I've chosen to pick for today, and you and I talked about, was October surprises, because as we know, it's a hot political season. And usually in every hot political season, there's something that's historically been called the October surprise. And that's usually some revelation, whether legitimate or falsified or fancified, that has been dropped usually by a campaign, whether a ballot issue or a candidate's campaign, who is currently behind in the polls going into the middle of October, into that critical voting has now opened and registration's closed, voting is now opened, and so therefore we have to do something to shake things up to drive our people to the polls or drive their people away from the polls come November. And that usually happens, Chuck, and you know, and there have been numerous October surprises through history, and I'm sure you probably remember more of them than I do. But again, so you know, you've got that situation of these surprises, and I think that this October is going to be somewhat interesting because we've already had one, and it was a surprise, not of the making. You know, this was a surprise that nobody saw coming.
Oh, absolutely not.
Either side saw coming, because you know, Chuck, as we've talked about we talked about state issue one and our recommendation for a no vote on the bill, and we talked about some groups that were in favor of it. One of the groups we talked about being in favor of the bill is the Christian Coalitions of America's Ohio chapter. They started running radio ads and did op-eds in the newspaper with a pastor who is their Ohio Justice Director.
Delaney.
And yeah, Delaney. Yeah, pastor by the name of Delaney from the Dayton area. And thank you. And I was trying to type this all in here as I'm talking, and I shouldn't be doing that. But
well, that does. It sounds like you drift off. It's like, well, I'm reading and no, typing no, and talking at the same time.
You're right there on it, so it's all good. But so they went out and they were making these pitches on radio and in op-eds from their justice director, Pastor Delaney, of how much they supported issue one because of how compassionate it was and how it's going to help people get into drug treatment and do all these wonderful things. Well, Chuck, Monday of this week, we get up to the newspaper to the revelation that Pastor Delaney, the Ohio Justice Director for Christian Coalition of America, has now publicly come out and recanted his position on issue one. He is now saying vote against the issue because, why, Chuck? He said it wasn't what he was led to believe it was, and it won't do what he was led to believe it will do.
In other words, he read it.
In other words, he read the amendment for himself, finally. And I may be presuming, and he may have read it and just not understood what he read beforehand, but as you and I talked, and we broke the amendment down, there is no other way to read the amendment. This amendment is horrific when it comes to issues of actually getting people treatment, getting them help, and making sure that you're lowering the abuse rates, you're lowering recidivism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Does it have some good things in it? Well, sure it does.
I'm sure it does, yeah.
And these are issues, parole reform, where you don't have the, parole officers throwing somebody back into jail because they moved a block away from where they lived. They went into their parole office to tell them, hey, I wanted to let you know that I moved. Well, you didn't tell us a week before you moved, so you're going back to jail. And Chuck, those are some realities. Those things have actually happened.
Oh, sure they
where do. Somebody has just moved from one apartment to the other. They go in to report during their regular reporting period to tell them, and then the parole officer's like, well, no, you violated your parole because you didn't tell us give us 10 days advance notice on what your move was going to be.
Yep.
And they'll revoke their probation and throw them back into prison for those kind of things. Those kind of situations need addressed, but they can be addressed by legislation and by going through the process of committee hearings and debate over it and crafting something that will work for everybody and work for communities and work for folks who need to have, an opportunity for a second chance.
Well, honestly, that kind of thing is in the realm of the courts. That's not really, the legislature's already spoken on that. That kind of thing is in the realm of the courts. To decide whether that's an important or a flagrant, a nonsensical, somebody moves across the hall. Well, you changed addresses. Well, the court would probably look at that and say, oh, come on. Does it violate the letter of the law? But yes, but does it really violate the spirit of the law? And that's really for a court to decide. But you're right. If the courts think their hands are tied on that, the legislature can step in and say, look, there's a little bit of leeway on that particular kind of thing. You're right. The real problem here is that issue one places a get out of jail free card in the Constitution. And what are the consequences for? Well, you get a little record that you've got a misdemeanor when you're in possession of fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, a list of really essentially bad things. And the idea being that, you shouldn't have that on your record as a felony is one of the things. And I'm laughing about this because, when I was a youngster coming up, they were changing all the juvenile laws so that juvenile records were sealed because people's lives were being supposedly destroyed by the fact that they'd committed some horrific crime when they were youngsters and quote unquote did their time by sitting it out until they were 19 and then got released. That has not worked out well for us. In fact, Barry, I'm going to segue just for a second. One of the reasons this kid from Maryland was able to get a gun, if you'll recall, this kid who perpetrated this massacre, this multiple shooting, who was from Maryland, he was from Baltimore area, was able to do that was because his record of having mental illness and having been committed to a mental institution was sealed because he was a juvenile.
Right.
As near as we can tell. I don't want to state that 100% unequivocally, and nobody's talking about it, which tells me I'm correct. When nobody's talking about it, in fact, that one fell off the radar real fast. We talked about it on this show earlier in the late in the summer. Because it was a big deal. It was going to be all about confiscating guns again, and then people started asking the important questions. So what this does essentially is make sure that the that sealing of your record, it's not the same thing, but they just make it so you don't have a black mark on your record. You know what can happen if someone who gets caught with fentanyl or methamphetamine or heroin or something really bad and they later go in to buy a gun? It's not a problem. It's not a problem because you don't have a felony.
Right.
Now, I'm not one of the people that's out there saying everybody who's got a felony should not be able to buy a gun. I think sometimes things are felonies that are absurd. Tax evasion. Do we really have to worry about a violent life of crime with someone who's been adjudicated to be guilty of tax evasion? Probably not. Especially since a lot of tax evasion cases are nonsense. But
yes.
Going back to it, essentially, that's why this thing, what it does is it sets in stone things that should be up to the discretion of the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And says, you no longer have jurisdiction in this area. We've taken it from you. It's in the Constitution. And a judge can very often, now you get bleeding hearts and you get hardcores, you know, you get hanging judges. But for the most part, judges look at a candidate and say, okay, this person is probably an addict. I'm going to convict him of the felony, but he's going to get diversion. He's going into a treatment program.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where most of them need to be. One of the problems with treatment programs is people go in and they come back out and they go back to the old lifestyle. Anybody who has lived with an alcoholic can tell you what's the first thing they tell you at Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't go hanging out in bars.
Well, yes, that would make sense.
Don't go hanging out with the people you used to hang out with. You got to get a new set of friends because what they're going to tell you is, You're not really an alcoholic. You're fine. You can have as many drinks as you want, and it's not a problem. And drug addicts have the same problem. They go back and hang out with the same people, which is why, again, this discretion is bad news. Because there's even after the first time it's a problem under this, the second time, guess what? You get cut loose again. The only way you can get convicted of a felony under this is if you have three of them in 24 months, 2 years.
Well, there's even a question about that is the way that amendment is worded, because there's a whole idea about non-felony probation violations.
Yeah.
And if you remember, possession is not a felony. It may be. But I'm sure a good defense attorney can argue that if they get picked up for the third time and the amount is still under a certain amount, then it really would be classified as a misdemeanor in any other circumstance, so therefore you can't classify it as a felony, and therefore you have to continue to give them probation.
Yeah, this is... We've gotten kind of into the minutiae of the thing when we were really talking about something else, but this is
well,
some
yeah,
stuff
I,
that...
I recognize that, but you know, just to re-clarify,
just
for
to re-clarify for everybody, but why we're so dead set against issue one,
and what we really want to say to people is, if you don't believe us, go read the language of the amendment for yourself. We'll have a link up on our site. You can go to the Secretary of State's page and get it. But don't read the talking points from either the pro or the anti issue one, folks. Read the language of the amendment.
Yeah.
It's there. You trust me, you'll figure it out, just like the pastor did who was repping for Christian Coalition and realized what he was saying wasn't what the amendment does.
Exactly.
Once he figured out what the amendment actually did, he realized he couldn't in good conscience support it anymore, and he did the right thing. He announced first that he was resigning from Christian Coalition because he was getting paid to be their Ohio Justice Director for this ballot initiative, and that he was requesting that the radio spots be taken down because it no longer reflects his position. Wow, talk about an October surprise, both for the pro issue one folks – and for Christian Coalition of America, who immediately came out with a statement from their one of their vice presidents doubling down on their support for state issue one.
Exactly.
Now, Chuck, if you had someone who was with you and said this and looked at it and said, no, listen, I have read this. It doesn't do any of the stuff that we've been told it would do. What would you do? Would you actually go look at it and say, okay, maybe you're right? Or would you double down and say, no, let me stick my fingers in my ears. I didn't hear you. We love it. If you most likely maybe were receiving funding in order to support it.
Well, that's just it. There are millions of dollars to be had. Christian Coalition of America did not go out and buy a $45,000 radio buy on their own.
No, they did not.
They got money. And where did they get it from? Well, they probably got it from some of the same money that came in to get this on the ballot, which was the Tides Foundation, the Open Society Foundation, yeah. The Zuckerberg, and I can't think of his wife's name, Chan Zuckerberg Foundation, all of which were ultra-liberal progressive groups. In fact, the Tides and the Open Society is George Soros.
Yes.
So the Christian Coalition of America is taking George Soros money to get a ballot initiative passed that will essentially lead to an increase, a drastic increase in crime, in my opinion. Because
So we're hoping that maybe this October surprise that the issue one backers got will help turn the tide to get people to understand that this is not what it's being sold as, and it's a bad deal for the state of Ohio.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Greg Delaney, who is this pastor, is to be congratulated for seeing the error of his ways. And honestly, he did it the right way. Not only did he withdraw... Now, he did give him too much time to take the ads off the air.
Sure.
When we talked about that at one point, that basically he's showing that he's a rookie in the political arena, and that's fine. Greg Delaney resigned from the Christian Coalition as the Ohio Justice Director for the Christian Coalition of America and asked them to take his ads off the air. Now, I'd heard a bunch of these. They run a lot before the local news, and you could pick these up in different places. In fact, if you go out to the Facebook account of Christian Coalition of Ohio, they were running a bunch of Pro One stuff. Now, I haven't looked.
Yes.
I have not looked since. But I'm guessing...
It's been toned way down, but it's still there.
Yeah. This Christian Coalition thing is it's an interesting case because we don't know if Greg Delaney's going to come out and... come out for the other side, come out against issue one, or whether he's going to sit tight, because he is kind of committed to lower sentences for prisoners with drug things. He does work directly with people who are addicts in prison. And that's a Christian thing to do, Barry, as we've talked about this off air.
Sure.
That's a Christian thing to do, is to come out and be in support of people who made horrible mistakes and need to change their lifestyle, and to get them out there and get them away from the lifestyles that could kill them and could get them back into a life of crime. Yeah, that's one of the things we're supposed to be doing. So that's noble, and that's a noble goal of issue one. But unfortunately, that has been twisted way out of shape by progressives who have grabbed it and tried to make it into a get out of jail free card for their own reasons. I'll be quite open with you. The Open Society Foundation essentially wants anarchy, because their whole thing, the whole open, and that's George Soros. What they want is anarchy, because what grows out of anarchy is they want to tear society down to nothing so they can rebuild it in their own image. This is one of those incremental steps to do that. We're just reiterating why we're dead set against issue one and why it's such a bad plan. And our kudos to Mr. Delaney for not only pulling out of the campaign, but also resigning his position with Christian Coalition of America. There may be more going on underneath the surface there. This may be one of those, how could you guys have so badly misled me? And you and I know how he got so badly misled, and what's the reason?
Because it was profitable to do so.
Because there's gigantic bags full of money attached to it. That's it.
That's the size of it.
And we all know that the Christian Coalition of America didn't go out and buy $45,000 out of its own worth of media buys out of its own pocket.
Well, it may have, but somebody was putting the money in the pocket that they bought it out.
Yeah, it's one of those in-out deals.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
Don't worry, there's more behind it if we get this thing passed, is essentially what they got told. Would be my guess. Again, I'm speculating, folks. I don't have inside knowledge. but I do have a knowledge of how these things work, as does Barry. We have both been in this long enough that we've seen it. We've seen people get steamrolled by the dollar signs, and suddenly you're committed to it, and there's so much money behind it, and you've hired staff, and you've got all this stuff, and all of a sudden it turns out to be not what you think, and you try to get out of it. What do you find out usually happens? Well, you find out that your group has been taken over, and you're out because they've packed your board. And they packed your board because they had money, and you decided that because they had money, they had to have members on your board. It's an old, ugly story.
Yes, it is.
And it happens all the time. But there's more October surprises out there. Lots more.
There was a big one, Chuck, a lot of people don't know about. But the Democrats are probably pretty happy about it, because one of the key things that they really have been hoping for a while just happened over the weekend. That is that Trump is dead. Yes, you heard that right, folks. Trump is dead. No, not Donald Trump, the president of the United States.
He's fine.
The Trump from Perump. A gentleman we've talked about on this program before, Chuck, Dennis Hoff, who is a candidate for a state Senate seat in Nevada. And Dennis Hoff is also, he was the Republican nominee. He knocked off the incumbent Republican in order to get the position, to get the nomination. And then he went on, and it looked like he was going to probably win the seat. But over the weekend, Mr. Hoff, who is the owner of seven facilities that provide comfort services, I guess is a way of putting
it. Oh, you're way too gentle. They're brothels, baby.
I'm trying to control the imagination a little bit here. In the state of Nevada, prostitution is legal, and so are brothels. And Dennis Hoff made his money owning seven of them.
Seven.
And providing services to those who are willing to pay for them. So he did not divest himself of any of those businesses while he was running for office. Embraced the image and called himself the Trump from Perump because of his free market philosophies. But over the weekend, Charles, he and his best friend I'm not sure if it's a common law wife, because I'm not even sure Nevada has that anymore. But he has been living with and sharing his adventures in life with another famous person, a lady by the name of Heidi Fleiss.
Now, that I didn't know.
Yes, they have been together since 2011. So he had spent they'd gone to a party of some sort, some campaign event, and then he went back to one of his facilities in the area with his best friend. And at that point, about 2 o'clock in the morning, decided that he was going to, shall we say, do an owner's inspection of the product. And so he adjourned to a room with one of the young ladies who works there to do
what
I don't have
do.
To explain what
yes.
he was trying to do. And so when his best friend in the morning woke up and came back to the room to get him up to go to a campaign event, they found him stretched out on the bed dead. So, Dennis Hoff, the Trump from Perump, is now deceased, but that doesn't change anything because it's too late to reprint ballots in Nevada, and so therefore Dennis Hoff's name will appear on the ballot, and if he does secure the majority of the votes, then, as you and I talked a little bit earlier, it's likely that the Republican Party will get to name a replacement to fill the seat. Which actually might be the best surprise they could have gotten, because they were chagrined over the idea of Dennis Hoff carrying the water for the Republican Party.
Yeah, exactly. The guy he beat. Wouldn't it be interesting if the guy he beat in the
And that's probably exactly what will happen.
Yeah, the guy beat in the primary will get the job.
One gets appointed. Because that's the way it was, according to them, that was the way it was supposed to have happened in the first place.
Well, there's a headline in the Chicago Tribune that says Nevada's famous pimp expected to win state election despite death.
See, they're already spinning it. It's incredible.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're expecting him to win the race anyway. And so they'll... I'm trying to speed read this because it just popped up once we talked about this. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, did we talk about who his best friend was?
Well, I kind of left that out. But okay,
the best friend that found him. Yeah,
his best friend who found him is a gentleman by the name of Ron Jeremy. Now, Ron Jeremy is better known by his nickname in the porn industry, the Hedgehog. The man has been a star in, I don't even think dozens would be the right word.
Hundreds.
Probably hundreds of pornographic movies. He is a legend in that industry. And I say that with just this look of disgust on my face.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's Dennis Hoff, who runs seven brothels. He's best friends with this guy. So, yeah, it was Mr. Jeremy who found Mr. Hoff's body after he had passed away after a night of imbibing too much of the product that he was peddling.
Wow. When I laughed about Ron Jeremy, it's derisive laughter, folks.
Of course.
Yeah, just so you know that. This is it's a circus. This is a libertarian circus, I'll be quite honest with you. This is Western libertarianism run amok. To show you that, you know, that first of all, Nevada is a strange place. It has one place that's ultra liberal, and every place else is ultra Republican. But I'm not saying conservative; they are ultra libertarian.
Right.
But they're not interested in Libertarian Party politics. They've captured the Republican Party. So, where's the liberal spot? Where's the most liberal spot in Nevada?
Well, probably Las Vegas.
It's Las Vegas, which is also the most populous spot in Nevada. So what you've got is, essentially, you've got, when you hear that, for instance, when Harry Reid was in the Senate, that he would fight out these horrible battles, where would he fight them out? He'd fight them out in Las Vegas. Why? Why? Because he didn't have support anyplace else.
Right, he didn't go to Reno, he didn't go to Pahrump, he didn't go to many of the other areas of Carson City, because those are all Republican areas.
Exactly. What he did was he played the game because he knew if he could capture a huge percentage of the vote in Las Vegas, then he had the state won, because it's a weird demographic there. I forget how many counties there are in Nevada. It's a huge state if you look at it on a map. And they've got like eight counties. Think about that.
Yes.
Think about that. Same thing with Arizona. I think Arizona has 13 counties. Some of those counties are bigger than some states. Some of the counties in those western states are bigger than Connecticut, Massachusetts. Definitely bigger than Rhode Island. Some of them are bigger than Delaware. You have to think in those terms. And the populations, you know... Connecticut has multiple times more people than not just a single county, but some of the entire states. I mean, I have a good friend that lives in Wyoming, and I think the population of Wyoming is 750,000 people. That's a big state. It's big.
That is a very, very big state.
Montana's the same thing. I think 800,000 people. But Montana's another weird political demographic. It's weird because it's got a lot of mining, and mining country is union country, which tends to be Democratic, but the Democrats from those states tend to be far more conservative.
This is true.
They still, you know, play the game, but they know how to keep the voters back home happy. So when you see guys like Hoff, you can't think in terms of conservatives like Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz wouldn't fly in Nevada. He's not
probably not.
He's not a libertarian.
He's not a libertarian. That's
He is. He's more of a libertarian than say a John Kasich or a Rob Portman, who are essentially liberals. Rob Portman's a Democrat with an R next to his name, and so is John Kasich. That wouldn't fly in Nevada, especially in a local representation race in one of these off counties, one of these smaller counties, which is where, you know, where he's, where what he was dealing with. So
exactly. Well, you know, Chuck, okay, so we've got some more surprises.
Oh, we've got lots of surprises
popping up. There's lots of surprises.
Well,
now, there's one that I want to talk about because it's one that we probably shouldn't be surprised, but it's just showing how tenuous some people's hold on, well, reality might be in this day and age. You know, we mentioned it a little bit before, but in Minnesota, you have, during this election cycle, you've had candidates for the ballot who have been physically assaulted just because they're Republicans.
Yes, exactly. And who are they? Who assaulted them? That's the real interesting question.
Well, according to the news reports, the assaults were done by those who consider themselves to be anarchists. But I have to ask the question, if you're an anarchist, why are you only attacking Republicans? You know, why are you going after Republican candidates? And then these assaults, I think it were two different individuals. A gentleman by the name of, state representative by the name of Sarah Anderson.
Yes.
Was out on the campaign trail. And basically, this, you know, she's out on the campaign trail. He was kicking and trying to destroy one of her yard signs. She confronted him, and he rushed at her, grabbed at her. She tried to get away, getting into her car. He hits her in the arm, physically punches her. And then she has to, like, you know, slam it in reverse and pull out of there, or else he would have tried to do further damage to her. And so police are investigating that one. And then there's another candidate, a gentleman by the name of Shane Meekland.
That's the way I'd pronounce it, Meekland.
Meekland, who basically is a first-time candidate. It's the first time he's ever run. He's out there. He's talking with people on Friday evening in a place. He was, a bar or something. And he was sitting at a table, and he was talking to somebody, probably about campaign issues, when a guy comes up behind him and sucker punches him. Smacks him in the head, knocks him over. He ends up with a concussion.
Well, he banged his head on the floor.
Yeah, they are still... They know they have a suspect who they're holding on charging until they get the medical reports back.
Well, because if in one case it's a case of assault,
right.
And the other thing it's a felonious assault, which is an intent to do great bodily harm,
right?
And that's probably what they're waiting for. But I'll be quite honest. Think about this. You've got people out there like Maxine Waters.
Right.
Like Eric Holder.
Yep.
Like Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely.
Like Bernie Sanders. Who either are openly inciting riot or are saying that it's perfectly understandable that these people would be assaulted during their campaigns. This is the level to which we have sunk. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you think it's all going to be over if the midterms come and the Republicans hold on to both houses, and then you've got Republicans holding both houses, the presidency, and with a conservative majority on the Supreme Court, we hope and think. Although people say, remember, these guys tend to grow in office. And what that means is they become more liberal progressive. But that being said, You think this is all going to die down? It's going to be worse. You need to be prepared for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I'm going to throw in a plug for a second. I meant to do it at the end of our addiction, you know, our issue one thing. Providence Presbyterian Church, where I'm an elder, is having an addiction conference on Saturday, October 27th, from 10 in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon. And yes, we do have snacks, and there will be a place where you can reserve your spot. Now, why am I telling you that? This is going to be a very good conference because it talks about the causes and prevention and treatment of addiction from a Christian perspective, which is going to be very different from a worldly perspective. But the Dr. George Scipione has been a Christian counselor. He is trained in nouthetic counseling, if you know what that is. It's a way of bringing people back to a Christian style worldview to eradicate their unbiblical thinking about their addiction. But we fully expect that there are some radicals who have already worked their way in, and they may attempt to disrupt our conference if our guest speaker does not come out and endorse issue one. There will be demands that he endorse issue one. We don't know for sure that's going to happen. We suspect that could be a thing. Why do we suspect that? Because that's the way these people work. If you look at who's behind issue one, the Tides Foundation, the Open Society Foundation, these people are paying radicals to riot in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're in for. Now, if you don't have the guts for it, then you can expect your society to change beyond recognition. That's one of the surprises in October. If you don't have the guts to gut it out and take it and continue to be brave in the face of some of the stuff that's going to happen, because these guys are not pulling any punches. They're saying directly, if you're listening, if we lose in November, we take it to the streets.
Okay, Chuck, I got news for you. If they win in November, they take it to the streets.
Yeah,
Because that's the Saul Alinsky playbook. It's constant upheaval, constant putting your opponent back on their heels, never letting up, never letting them get a breath, never letting them get a foothold. This is the way our political discourse is going to run until something breaks. And that something is most likely going to be when one of these assaults, or such as like the shooting at the baseball field of Steve Scalise and others, turns into a homicide. And at that point, I think that you're going to see an entirely different tenor being addressed. And it may very well be the wake-up call that many people need to start really delving into the worldview and the philosophies that underlie many of these political vehicles.
Exactly.
Whether it's the Democrat Party or the Socialist or the Tides Foundation or others. Until you understand what your opponent is about, you never know how to address their assaults. And they'll just keep getting worse. But once you figure out how to address them, and you address it with commanding presence, it will stop.
Right. Now,
it's just like, okay, I don't necessarily advocate for this. I'm just sharing a personal experience. When I was young, I went to a school, a public school. At that public school, there was a child who was older than I was, who felt that because that I was small and rotund, that gave him the right to basically be cruel and to assault me on a regular basis. One of the best pieces of wisdom I ever received was from my mother, who basically said, unless you stand up for yourself and give back to him what he's giving you, it'll never stop. The next time I was out, the individual came up, began to start an assault that was met with compelling force. To the point where that person never, ever approached me again.
Barry, there's...
Now, what did I pay a cost for that? Yeah, I had to go to the doctor and get my hand in a cast because I broke my hand on his face. I broke my hand on his face.
Yeah, which means probably part of his face was broken as well.
Yeah, you know, at that point, I didn't really care.
You didn't really care.
And whether or not the statute of limitations has ever run out on that or not, I don't care.
It's a little late.
If somebody wants to come and 40-some years later file a case against me, bring it on.
It's a little late, and the person, the way I look at it, I've run into people who bullied me in the past, and they're all sort of like very contrite.
Because
I was a skinny little kid, and I got beat up too, and then later I got big. I'd see people that had bullied me, and you know, there was a meme I saw, and it says, you know, when you're in school, when the kids are all beating up this one kid, and then 20 years later, they're having drinks together in the bar, right? They're having a beer together.
Oh, yeah.
This was for men. The women were like enemies 20 years ago. They're like at each other's throats, and then present day, they're still enemies.
they're still mad at each other.
You know, that kind of thing tends to go away. You know, and you're sort of, we all tend to mellow out of that. But let's look at it from a different perspective. I mean, you're talking about engaging in self-defense, not in aggressive self-defense, but in a self-defense where if it becomes necessary, then you defend yourself. And you defend yourself with all necessary force. Is exactly what you said. Here's the problem. In places like, if you've been paying attention, in places like Seattle, where the mayor believes that it's okay to use violence against people who you disagree with politically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, there was a book years ago by a guy named, I think, Bill McElhaney, was it? When the Wicked Rule a City?
Chuck McElhaney.
Chuck McElhaney. I know another guy named Bill McElhaney. I have a copy as well. And now, what's it about? It's about when homosexual activists take over a city.
Right. He was a pastor of, I think, an Orthodox Presbyterian church in San Francisco.
Go OPC. Yes, in case you couldn't tell, I'm Orthodox Presbyterian Church. But that being said, this isn't about homosexuals in general. It's about progressives. Which include, in many cases, not all cases, those particular activists who are going out in the street and are being encouraged to physically assault people who are demonstrating their faith in the street. And not only that, the police have been told to stand down unless the protesters try to defend themselves. In which case, the people being assaulted are to be arrested and charged with assault.
Wait a minute, the people that are being assaulted?
Yes.
Are to be charged with assault?
Yes.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks.
Well, you probably didn't hear it here first, he said, as he slowed down his speech so it could be understood. No, it's I'm not pulling this out of whole cloth, and I mean essentially, the police are being sent in to arrest. Well, supposedly for their own protection, but it's not for their own protection at all. They find themselves under charges of disturbing the peace, and that kind of thing. This is what we're going to have to be dealing with. And this is why, Barry, this is why there's such a huge divide in the country. This is not a case in the old days. People would disagree, and people, you know, you and I, when we were in Columbus one day, and it was like, it was in January, I remember this, we were kind of laughing about it. I think we were in Potbellies having a sandwich or something. And there were two tents on the street, and there was a big sign on it that said, Columbus is occupied. It was about 18 degrees, and there were like three guys living in these two tents on the streets of Columbus. And I go, you guys can occupy all you want to. you know, did we have a violent impulse to go show that they were full of nonsense? No, we were willing to let them parody themselves by sitting out in a tent in 18-degree weather.
I almost felt like going and buying a blanket and taking it over.
You guys, here's
like,
yeah.
At least be warm while you're occupied.
I was going to say, here's a cup of hot coffee and a sandwich, guys. You know? No, but this is the kind of thing we're going to be dealing with. And all major cities are showing signs of not allowing. I mean, all you have to do is pay attention to anyone who doesn't exactly comply and agree with the social justice warrior platform is, by definition, their own definition is a Nazi. Okay?
Yes, I've heard that.
Yes. So, therefore, you'll see guys that are running around with these Punch Nazis t-shirts. If you disagree with them, they feel themselves perfectly justified in simply sucker punching you. This is what we're dealing with, and this is another... This won't be an October surprise. This will be a post-November surprise.
Especially if the midterms turn out the way I think they're going to turn out and not the way they think they're going to turn out.
Exactly.
Chuck, you know, as we've been talking here, I've been looking over, and you're starting to see, you know, we're less than 3 weeks out from the election right now. This is the time where if there's a blue wave and a tsunami that's taking place, it should be that we should start seeing the water level rising, i.e. the polls tightening up. What we're seeing is exactly the opposite. We're starting to see the spreads widening, especially in U.S. Senate races. Marsha Blackburn against Phil Bredesen. She's now, even with Taylor Swift, the singer, jumping in against her for Bredesen, she is now up 5.5 points on Phil Bredesen. And a generic ballot shows the Republicans winning 50-42 in Tennessee.
That is in Tennessee, and that race was supposedly a toss-up early on. You want to know the truth? It wasn't. One of the reasons that they talked Taylor Swift into coming out, who, by the way, normally just says, "I don't play politics." Somebody talked her into it.
Well, her October surprise is a large number of her fans have reacted very negatively to her coming out and getting involved in politics.
Which is why, until now, she very wisely avoided it. Now she's basically somebody prodded her. One of the October surprises, and let's be clear about this, that's already passed, is Brett Kavanaugh. What was supposed to happen with Kavanaugh is these allegations were supposed to drive him away. He was supposed to withdraw from the... they were convinced, and in the old days, they probably could have pulled it off with old media, because they're
with another president.
Yes, and with another president. Another president, a George Bush, would have talked him into withdrawing. Would have insisted that he withdraw. Trump's
okay, let me just put it this way. Had Brett Kavanaugh been nominated by Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, John Kasich, Lindsey Graham, or Ted Cruz, they would have pulled his nomination.
Almost
every last one of them would have pulled his nomination.
Yep.
Because they don't have the backbone to stand up when the left attacks. That's the one thing you get with this president, is he never apologizes and he never backs down.
Well, that ties in with another October surprise that's peripheral, but not really.
No, not really. I know what you're going to go to. Go ahead.
Well, you may think you know what I'm going to go to, but you don't. Stormy Daniels lost a huge lawsuit.
Yes, she did.
And maybe that's where you thought I was going.
No. The defamation suit was one thing, but yes, that was thrown out of court by a federal judge who basically said Trump has the right to tweet what he wants to tweet.
Well, not only that, she has to pay his legal expenses.
Exactly.
So, hey, folks,
his attorneys.
All those progressives who went out there and crowdfunded Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels.
Yep.
Guess what? You just put money into Trump's attorneys' pockets.
That's got to hurt.
Now, that's got to burn. I heard a journalist who said, you're not really going to hold her to that, are you? And he's like, are you kidding me?
You're not really going to hold her to that. Why wouldn't you hold her to that? She brought a suit that was turned out to be frivolous.
I'm going to be quite honest with you at this point. She was used by Michael Avenatti.
Right. First of all, Avenatti was trying to use. He was hoping that Trump would roll over and pay a big bunch of money, which he would get the majority of, because he's sitting there with IRS liens. A judge's order to freeze assets because he's been siphoning assets from other clients.
Yes, to support his lavish lifestyle.
Exactly.
Which means he'll end up losing his license, because he won't lose it over being a third rate attorney. He'll lose it over misusing his clients' funds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Commingling of funds.
He'll get disbarred over that. But the fact is that, that is another October surprise that nobody was expecting, because Avenatti was absolutely convinced when he was involved in bringing up this very strange woman who had these allegations of Kavanaugh being involved in a gang rape.
Yes.
With zero corroborative evidence. Blasey Ford also had zero corroborative evidence, but he popped this up. He thought he was going to parlay that into helping him out in some of these lawsuits. And yes. Instead, this whole thing has blown up in his face as an October surprise. This was the thing they were going to use to bring down Republicans. And in fact, what it has done, the whole Kavanaugh, Stormy Daniels thing, and especially Daniels' lawyer, Avenatti. Daniels is a peripheral player. Avenatti's the primary player. And there are people out there who are saying, because of you, Brett Kavanaugh sits in the seat. And they're not exactly wrong.
Right. That's not too far of a stretch of the imagination. Yes.
So that blew up. That was an October surprise that blew up in the left's face. The whole Kavanaugh thing blew up in their face. And now we've got cases where people who, for instance, like Elizabeth Warren, sometimes known as Pocahontas,
but she's no longer foe. No. That's new information. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
She's no longer foe. She is 1,024th. Her great, 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 oh, I think, four
what?
Greats back grandmother had. Cherokee, I think?
No, guess what? It turns out she has essentially less than 1%.
Less than 1%, yes.
Yeah, less than 1%. She has no Cherokees in her background.
Okay.
And in fact, somebody dug it up, and her relatives were involved in rounding up the Cherokees for the Trail of Tears.
Oh, no.
Yes. So,
oh, no. I didn't hear that one.
But what has come out of this thing is, first they came out and said, see, she's got native blood. Well, guess what, Barry? Everybody has as much native blood as she has.
I was just about to say.
just about the average person has like 0.1%, and the low end of her estimate is at 0.1%. So she's somewhere around where the average person in the United States of America who's been here for more than a couple generations is. We've all got mixed blood. There's an interesting article, a couple of interesting articles on this, but the fact is, this thing has blown up completely in the left's face. You couldn't get anybody in the mainstream media to say anything bad about Elizabeth Warren. Hiawatha is another one of her names. But now they're coming out and attacking her, and they go, why didn't you wait until after the election to bring up this DNA test? You have essentially handed the Republicans talking points on a silver platter. They can now crow and say, see, we told you so, because we can say we told you so. She touted herself. They touted her at Harvard as the first woman of color on the law school faculty.
Yes.
Well, the only color in her, or the only color in any appreciable amount in her DNA is white. And white to the point that her ancestors were involved in a genocide against the Cherokees. Who were, these kind of things just blow up and blow up and blow up and blow up. This is why the Democrats are extremely disheartened going into the election, and the Republicans are resurgent.
Absolutely. Oh, and the other thing is, even though the media is fawning all over him and making much of the fact that he's historically raised, you know, 36 or 38 million dollars,
yeah,
for his race. And I saw one article fawning over how they could have the first Democrat in the U.S. Senate from Texas in like 24 years or 34 years. Beto O'Rourke is still losing to Ted Cruz. And it's starting to look like it's going to go into double digits.
It's looking ugly. Yeah, it's looking real bad.
Beto O'Rourke is going to have $38 million that he will dump probably in the next 2 weeks on TV blitzkriegs and, you know, at what they call AstroTurf. You know, it's not grassroots. It's paid canvassers.
Yeah.
To go out to try to salvage, I would say, salvage his reputation, because if he loses to Ted Cruz by double digits, after all that the left, the Democrats, and Hollywood, with dumping all of their money in, have dumped to him.
Well,
you know what? That race right there might actually be the thing that puts the kibosh on the constant anarchy that we assume will going to happen anyway, because if you've done all that and you still can't win, there's no way you can win.
You need to fall back and regroup.
Sort of armed insurrection at that point.
You need to fall back and regroup.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the Democrats are already seeing that, but I can tell you that the money is coming from the radical left, and the radical left is demanding that Beto O'Rourke go negative, which he is gladly,
which he did,
which he's doing.
Today he started running negative ads.
They've had to go negative in Pennsylvania, although they went so negative that they actually had to withdraw the ads, but they didn't withdraw them from all markets, only from some.
Only from the ones that complained, yes.
Yes. So, look, we're running short on time, but there are lots of October surprises going out there, ladies and gentlemen. We ought to hold a contest. See if you can find your own October surprise.
Okay, here right now, I'm looking at Real Clear Politics, because they do an average of polls across the country for some of these races. Right now, for the Senate, they are showing that in their averages, they show the Senate holding, the Republicans holding 50 seats, the Dems holding 44 right now, with six up in the air. They're looking, based on their averages, for the Republicans to get plus two pickups. In other words, the Republicans are going to gain two seats.
I think that's conservative.
And that may be conservative. Now, here's the deal. One of the races which should be going to the Republicans, but is going right now, the trends is in Montana, the John Tester seat for the Democrat Tester.
Right.
They've got him up 3 points. But if you remember, the margin of error in most of these polls is 3 to 4 points. He's within the margin of error as an incumbent.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
He's in trouble. Dean Heller is up by almost 2 points in Nevada. Martha McSally is up. She's barely up. I mean, it's a neck and neck in Arizona, but, you know, there's going to be some things that are going to happen in Arizona, too.
Well, her opponent is being exposed as a radical progressive, and that's not sitting well in Arizona.
But right now, Ted Cruz, on average, is up 7 points over Beto O'Rourke. That is the marquee match that the Democrat progressive leftists are hoping for.
Well,
he's their poster child.
Yeah.
He's getting beat like a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah.
And I say that without blinking, because it is. He's getting thumped.
Like a rented mule.
Like a rented mule.
Yeah.
It's just incredible to see this.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. We are out of time. We want you to go out and look for your own October surprises. And let us know. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. We'd like to hear from you. And we will be here again next week. And we ask that you join us for another Principles and Policies.